Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 264 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her dreams. Yep, you heard me right. This is going to be absolutely amazing. Before we hop into this episode, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Okie dokie, now here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show because I love your feedback. Bottom line, just love it, love to hear from you. So this is your first reminder to make sure to do that. We'll be talking about that later on. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
So, how many of you have been having really screwed up dreams during this whole global pandemic? Seriously? And if it's not the global pandemic by as little lonesome, it's the economic strife, it's the social isolation. I could go on. I've been talking about this for weeks with all of our other expert guests. It's just, but wow, the whole issue of dreams. What's going on when we close our eyes and we sit back and we just try to, grab a few Z's? And then strange things start going on. So lo and behold, I was reading my Wall Street Journal, just about the only thing I could stomach these days in terms of really catching up on all things news. And there was this fabulous article that was just written by Samathi Reddy, who's one of my favorite authors, journalists, with the Wall Street Journal, and it was called How Sleep Has Changed in the Pandemic, Insomnia, Late Bedtimes, Weird Dreams. Okay, I get it with the insomnia, the late bedtimes, the weird dream thing. Okay, now you got me at weird dreams. I needed to understand this because I have been hearing this from just about everyone. People have been sitting back saying, wow. So then there it was, Dr. Deirdre Lee Barrett, a dream researcher. Yes, there are dream researchers at Harvard Medical School, has an online dream survey she'll be talking about, where more than 8,000 people have logged their dreams during the pandemic. People who are getting more sleep may be remembering more dreams, she says. Sleepers generally dream every 90 minutes, and the dream periods get longer as the night progresses, she says. The first dream period, which correlates with the rapid eye movement or REM sleep, is only 5 to 6 minutes, but by the eighth hour of sleep, it may be as long as 30 minutes. Waking up more often or a fragmented night of sleep can also increase the likelihood of remembering dreams. Oh my gosh. Okay, that was it. I stalked Dr. Barrett, found her at Harvard, and I said, you have got to enlighten our huge Her podcast audience about all things dreams. And here's the best part. She has just put out a brand new book. And this book is called Dr. Barrett. Go ahead and tell us, what's the name of the book?
Pandemic Dreams.
That's right, Pandemic Dreams. That's exactly what it is. And this is now available right now, this very moment on Amazon. Run and get it, Pandemic Dreams. Oh my God, this is just so amazing. So here's the deal. I want to tell you a little bit about Dr. Barrett. So Dr. Barrett is a PhD, is a past president of both the International Association for the Study of Dreams and the American Psychological Association's Division 30, the Society for Psychological Hypnosis. She's written four books: Subnormal Stimuli, Wasteland, The Committee of Sleep, and The Pregnant Man and Other Cases from a Hypnotherapist's Couch. She's also editor of four additional books. And in addition, she's editor-in-chief of the journal Dreaming, the journal of the Association for the Study of Dreams, and a consulting editor for Imagination, Cognition, and Personality, and the International Journal for Clinical and Experimental Hypnosis. I'm exhausted just reading this. Just an incredible background. And clearly, I read her in the Wall Street Journal, but she's everywhere. She's been on television, Good Morning America, The Today Show. I can only imagine, Dr. Barrett, that you're, well, shall we say, in great demand, especially nowadays. Dr. Barrett, welcome to the HER podcast.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Oh, my God. So you have this, well, first of all, my team is dying to know, how did you get into this field of study? What was this all about? I mean, where, of all the things you could have done, why this?
I think I just had very vivid dreams and lots of dream recall. So I was fascinated with them from childhood onward. I think most psychologists go to graduate school in psychology and then they pick a specialty. But I did just the opposite. It was like I was always interested in dreams. So as I got to my teen years, I realized if somebody was going to pay me to talk and think about dreams all the time, I better go to major in psychology and grad school in clinical psych. So that's what I did.
I just think it's fabulous. And, you know, I'm someone who's always been exquisitely curious about the whole dream thing. Take us through a little bit about what happens in sleep and dreams. So I read a little bit about it from the Wall Street Journal article, but tell us a little bit about what happens in that dream state. You're exhausted, you fall asleep. Boom. Now tell us what happens about dreams.
Well, almost all, not quite, and I'll get into that if we talk about post-traumatic dreams, but almost all dreams occur during rapid eye movement sleep. And as you mentioned, we go into that every 90 minutes, but each REM period gets longer. So in the rest of sleep, our brain is much less active than when we're awake. And when we go into a REM period, it activates about the same amount as when we were awake. In the 50s, when they discovered REM sleep, all they could see basically off the crude EEG was that it looked the same as when it was awake. Now that we can do imaging of much tinier areas, what we see is that some parts of the brain, like our visual cortex and areas associated with emotion, are even more active than they are when we're awake. And other areas that have to do with logic and linear reasoning and verbal areas are somewhat less active. So it's not the exact same pattern as being awake, but it's just as much activity as we dream.
So how about remembering dreams? This is always a question I get. It's like, why the heck can't I remember what the heck I dreamed about? And I really felt like it was an important dream. And the moment I opened my eyes, damn, I lost it. And there's this horrible moment of frustration. It's like, I really wanted to remember it because I felt it was significant. What's up with memory of dreams?
Yeah, those are some other areas that are different during dreaming sleep. The area associated with short-term memories is turned on as we dream, but the areas associated with transferring memories into longer-term storage is turned off. So most dreams are lost forever. If you have a REM period and you just pass on into another stage of sleep, you will not recall that dream ever. You have to wake up from the dream to have even a chance at it getting into long-term memory. So in sleep labs where they monitor people and they wake them up a few minutes into each REM period, most people recall 5 detailed dreams a night if they're woken up at just the right moment. But first of all, we don't wake up from most of them. And then secondly, typically, but not as much during lockdown, people wake up to an alarm. They're jumping up to pour caffeine into themselves and rush off to work or school. So we turn our attention to something else, which completely stops the process of short-term memories getting into long-term memory. Part of the reason that people seem to be recalling more dreams during the pandemic, especially early in the lockdown, was lots of people were catching up on sleep and not as likely to use an alarm. So they were likelier to wake up out of a dream period. And they were just getting more sleep and the last long REM period of the night, which is usually chopped off the way most Americans sleep. So dream recall was way up early on in the pandemic and still seems to be somewhat more than average.
Interesting. Well, you know, from the Wall Street Journal article, you said basically what was stated about this was on a reading of about 6,000 of the dream reports that have come to you from all over the world since March 24th, you said that they fall into a few main clusters, those about getting COVID or being afraid of having it, metaphors for getting the virus, most commonly involving bug attacks, lapses in safety measures where people dream that they are in public and suddenly realize they don't have a mask or are too close to someone, or imagery stemming from stay-at-home orders and lockdowns, such as people locked in jail. Wow, that's really amazing. That people are that specific.
Yeah, and it was 6,000 dreams when I talked to the that reporter, but it's now 9,000. And I'll just mention slightly more than 6,000 of the 9,000 are from women. Almost any time I give a talk on dreams, there's a huge skew in the gender proportions, and that's been true of this survey I'm conducting. More women want to write in about their dreams. I mean, I do have 3,000 men. That's a pretty good sample, but more women.
Are you surprised by that?
No. Maybe early in my career, I was surprised by the gender discrepancy that I'd see when I'd give a talk or just there's a main international dream conference and the attendees there are about 2/3 women. And I teach courses on dreams and more women sign up. So I'm very used to that now, but I was puzzled by it a little bit at first.
Is there a gender specificity with regard to dreams? Quality, quantity, memory of, anything like this?
Just barely. Like number of dreams recalled and length of dreams and vividness of dreams and emotion in dreams. Those all correlate just barely with being female if you've got a huge sample, but it just accounts for a few percentage of the difference. So it does not account for why it's 2-1 women clearly it's a matter of interest, not just of dream recall.
And you also mentioned in what was mentioned in the article at the end was finally there are dreams imagining the future. Some of these are, well, it's all about the apocalypse, right? While others see a future with a cleaner, improved environment. It's almost like you're trying to, you know, you're rectifying the situation in your mind, like it's going to be okay, that type of thing. With the other 3,000 that you've collected since the article came out, have you seen anything different or was it just substantiating and confirming what you already had?
They have been changing somewhat over time. I mean, even by the time I'd hit the 6,000, I'd seen some changes. Basically, through late April and May, there were a lot more anxiety dreams about catching the virus. They might be either very literally the person dreams they're having trouble breathing or spiking a fever, or the metaphors like the bug attacks that the person identifies as thinking is about the virus. And then already by May, there were a lot more of the metaphors for lockdown. I mean, all these categories have been there all along, but they're just changing in proportion. So the dreams you mentioned, where the people who are sheltering at home alone dream they're in prison, solitary confinement. But at the opposite end of the continuum, people who are sheltering at home with their family or roommates, sometimes more people than generally live with them, and 24/7, those people sometimes dream that their whole neighborhood moves in with them. One woman couldn't walk through her apartment because everyone had cots set up everywhere. Another one was trying to use the bathroom and she couldn't get her bathroom door closed because people's stuff was all over it because her apartment was so crowded. A mother who was homeschooling her 10-year-old for real dreamed that the school sent her a message saying that her child's entire class was being sent to her condo and she was to homeschool the whole class for the rest of the lockdown. So there became more and more of those things about the secondary effects that people were dreaming with. And then when the lockdown was in full force, any dreams I saw about reopening were really happy wish fulfillment. Everybody was coming out and it was all wonderful. But now as most of the world is actually in some stage of reopening, the dreams about reopening have become much more anxious ones as people are facing it as a reality.
I just think, you know, I have been blessed by getting a copy of your book, Pandemic Dreams. And I love the way you've laid this out for people. And clearly the titles of the chapters are very provocative. The Year of Dreaming Vividly. Why now? And so I think you've clearly addressed that. And I think that it doesn't take a fathom leap of faith here to really figure out why this is so traumatic for so many people. And you say that the action item is dream sharing and dream work. Can you just expound on that a little bit? A little teaser for people who are definitely going to be grabbing the book Pandemic Dreams.
Yeah, each of the five chapters ends with an action activity, dream work exercise. And most of them are for dealing with the pandemic dreams. But then that first section, I offer ones that are just basically what I would suggest people do with any dream. And it's in that first section that talks about how many people have a sort of newly vivid dream life. So I briefly describe the two most common dream work techniques that are used by professionals and they're used in lay people's group, but you can do either one to a certain extent on your own. And they're definitely not that dream dictionary, look it up, or an expert tells you this is a symbol for this. Responsible dream work is helping the dreamer get at their own metaphors, and only you can interpret your dream, but somebody else can help you. So one of the methods is called the dream interview, and someone else can do this, but you can do it for yourself and just go through each element in the dream, asking, just pretend I'm from another planet. What is this object? What is this thing? What is this activity? For each of the key things in the dream, and just hear what comes out of your mouth, because nobody does a literal dictionary definition. It tends to be some kind of revealing. You ask somebody who's dreamed about a dog, which again, you could look up in a dream dictionary and you'd get the author's association, but not yours. But you ask a person, just tell me what a dog is. And one person will say, oh, they're these cute little things that we have to take care of. They're sort of like children. And the next person will say, they're these big animals with sharp teeth. I got bit by a dog when I was 10 years old. I still have scars from it. And a third person will say, they're man's best friend. They're more loyal than people will be to you. So for each of those, you just immediately hear, you know, that person's metaphor. And they're completely different. So that's what you want to do with elements in your dream. In the book, I have an example of working with this young man who dreamed about going into a bar. This was right after lockdown had started, but he was out wandering around. He found one bar open. It was a tourist bar that he would not usually have gone into, but it looked lively. So he went in there, ordered a drink, and he was, as he was waiting for his drink, the man next to him fell over and blew away and was just a cardboard cutout. And he looked around at the other patrons in the bar to see if they were as surprised as he was, and he realized they were all cardboard cutouts. And so when I was doing a dream interview with him, I asked him about multiple of the elements, but when I asked him about cardboard cutouts, he first started just describing what they looked like, and then he said, actually, the only ones I can think of really having seen are in the movie Home Alone. And he starts describing, it's actually Home Alone 2, that has this scene where the kid who's abandoned at his uncle's house in the second of those films, and there are these criminals trying to at least kidnap him, possibly kill him. So he sets up cardboard cutouts in the window, which he moves with pulleys to pretend like there's a big party and lots of people with him. So that was this guy's association to cardboard cutouts, is you're home alone, miserable, scared, and threatened, and so you produce these cardboard cutouts to pretend like you have lots of friends there.
Amazing. Just absolutely amazing. I love this dream work. It's neat to listen to highly credible dream work instead of a lot of the strange stuff you get off, as you mentioned, Google, which is, you know, if you dream of water, it must mean this, that type of thing. What is dream sharing? Is that really just, for all intent and purposes, talking about what the dream meant to you and what transpired during the dream and you're kind of processing it?
Well, people mean different things by that terms, including the online groups that do that. And some people mean it almost just literally. Like, there are groups that just like to recount dreams. I mean, they are interesting adventures. They are experiences we've had. Some of them make good stories, and we'd like to tell those stories to other people. So for some dream sharing, the emphasis is really on telling the story of the dream, and they may not do any interpretation at all, either from the dreamer or other people asking the kinds of questions I'm talking about. And I think even there, that something important happens psychologically, that even if we're not interpreting, that sort of the unconscious of one person is getting through to the unconscious of another. And kind of like how people have felt closer when they share their experiences of lockdown or their fears about the virus, when we share the dream version of that, we sometimes feel closer yet to hear that other people have had a bug attack dream, or other people have had that dream where you go out and you suddenly realize you're not wearing your mask. So there's just literally dream sharing. And then there are all kinds of interpretive works that happen in some dream sharing groups.
I have tremendous interest in trauma for a lot of reasons. And trauma-based therapy has always been of great interest to me. One of my dear friends is Christine Courtois, who wrote Complex Trauma, the textbook, etc. Yeah, she's fabulous. And you have a chapter called Traumatic Nightmares. And you know, you mentioned healthcare workers, survivors of previous traumas, fever dreams, and then your action is mastery dreams and re-scripting traumatic nightmares. I happen to feel that the mass majority of people, you know, have had, you know, clearly, however they wish to define it, trauma in their life. This doesn't mean you have to have a building fall on you. It could mean lots of different things, but I'm exquisitely interested in this whole issue of trauma dreams and trauma nightmares. Take us through, how different is it when someone who is a trauma survivor dreams? What goes on?
Well, I think you're right that in the more general use of the term, we're mostly all trauma survivors to some extent. But I do think there's a distinction for people who, you know, have had a building fall on them,
who
have been through something that's so defining that it is like still just affecting every moment of their lives, and they are dreaming these recurring things about that one event. And so garden variety nightmares usually have kind of metaphoric, you know, a witch is chasing you, or, you know, they're just fantastic, or bugs are attacking you in these dreams. But the post-traumatic nightmares usually replay an event that's really happened in waking life. And they can have some dreamlike distortion where it's more bizarre than the reality, or they can also go one step worse where something that the dreamer was afraid was about to happen actually happens in the dream. But they're still like repeating a waking life event over and over. And these are an exception to dreams and nightmares occurring almost entirely in rapid eye movement sleep. The post-traumatic nightmares occur across all sleep stages pretty equally. And in fact, I'm among the clinicians who believe that they're probably pretty much the same thing as waking flashbacks, where hallucinatory imagery of a trauma intrudes on your waking consciousness.
Wow, yes.
I think the memory is just replaying in all stages, including sleep. And when it happens in sleep, it's likelier to be a little more bizarre and distorted than when it's intruding awake. But so these are fairly different than other nightmares and anxiety dreams. Other nightmares and anxiety dreams, some people are very bothered by, but others will say their nightmares are kind of interesting. They wouldn't particularly want them to go away for the regular nightmares. And everybody who has post-traumatic nightmares wants them to stop. They just describe them as being exactly like having the rape or the fire or, you know, 9/11 happening in front of you, you know, over and over. So that's why I have a separate chapter for them, because the dreams I got from the people who are frontline healthcare workers who were working in emergency rooms and intensive care units, or just any place where suddenly most of the patients were very, very ill with COVID, and they were pretty overwhelmed in resources and under protected with gear. They really had the kind of nightmares that people in war zones have. And actually, when I started my survey on the morning of March 24th, for the first week or more, I wasn't getting trauma dreams from American healthcare workers, but I got some early dreams from Italy, where the healthcare workers were just having god-awful nightmares about people dying on respirators. And really the most common dream was something about trying to get a tube down someone's breathing passages when they were so constricted that was difficult, or the tube had come out of the patient, or the respirator was malfunctioning. There were other processes, hanging platelets for people that needed those. But basically, you know, a sick and about to die patient is completely your responsibility, and something's going wrong and you can't save them. And that was the nightmare that, like I say, I saw earliest on from healthcare workers in Italy, but then the American healthcare workers begin to look a lot like that as New York and Boston and New Jersey and some places were just overwhelmed.
And you also had fever dreams. Tell us about fever dreams.
Yes. Well, they are another category unto themselves, and they may not be exactly a dream. The most we know about them is that the brain usually looks like it's partly asleep. The person will use the term dream and say they were asleep, but the brain is partly asleep. Other areas are awake, and other areas just look so abnormal in their function that they're not typical of anything you'd see awake or asleep when the person is well. So it's people hallucinate in that state, but they're sometimes more aware of real things going on. And the vast majority of fever dreams are very scary, but they're not always obviously frightening content. One of the big things that's frightening is that, unlike our regular dreams, where we just don't do reality testing. I mean, if you're in your bedroom one moment and then you're out on the beach the next moment without any transition, in a dream, you just normally don't notice that. That's fine. Yeah, it's in my bedroom. Now I'm on the beach. Don't know how I got here. But the fever dream person, if they're in one setting and then they're suddenly in another setting, they will be terrified by how that happened and how that's possible. And they'll be struggling to figure it out, and they'll suspect one setting is real and the other one isn't, but they can't sort out which one. And very often it's shifting between a fantastic scene and the hospital setting, or just their regular home versus the hospital setting. But it can be two sort of fantastic dream scenes where probably neither is actually anything they're experiencing. So some of the imagery is very scary. I opened that chapter with a dream from a man who dreamed that the medical staff removed his lungs and replaced them with robotic lungs, which went into the cavity where his lungs had been, but also stuck out far in front of him. So he was looking down at this device that looked like the open motherboard of a computer that was supposed to be breathing for him. And it was so heavy that he felt like it was impairing his breathing. And he was running a very high fever, but he was also presumably having trouble breathing from the COVID in his lungs as he was attributing this to the robot lung operation.
Whoa. I mean, this is so absolutely fascinating. Now tell me, you know, in traumatic, in the chapter on traumatic nightmares, you have action, mastery dreams, and re-scripting traumatic nightmares. Could you go into mastery dreams and also the re-scripting so we understand what you're talking about?
Yes. And those techniques are developed mostly for people who have post-traumatic stress disorder, where after a trauma has moved a little ways into the past. Almost everybody in acute trauma situations has nightmares about it. But for a lot of people, they just naturally subside in a matter of days to weeks. But for the people that keep dreaming about the trauma after it's over, as some healthcare people definitely will, even once the ICUs are emptying of the COVID patients, we hope, some people keep dreaming it over and over. And this is more what that technique is for. I mean, to kind of overwhelmed healthcare workers having nightmares, I mean, I would mostly just say, you know, get as much sleep as you can, do whatever relaxes you. The nightmares are likely to pass, as all the stress does. But when they don't, for some people, the technique that works best is something called re-scripting or developing mastery dreams. And usually that's done with a therapist, but you can try it on your own. The therapist would ask you if the dream could change in some way, how would you like it to turn out differently? And a lot of people just say, I just would want to wake up if the nightmare starts. And you can train people to do that, but if you train them to re-script the dream, that seems to be even more effective, just waking up from it. You know, you're awake, it gets rid of the nightmare, but it aggravates insomnia. But if you come up with what would be a satisfying conclusion, and some people know immediately how they'd like the dream to turn out differently, and other people, if they don't, we try to offer options, but very different options, so we're not leading them. And I mean, I've done this actually much more with rape survivors and 9/11 survivors and those kinds of situations. So often what I'm talking about are things like, well, you could fight off the attacker yourself, or somebody could show up and rescue you, or it could be a very dreamy thing where the attacker shrinks down to be 1 inch tall, or you just kind of shoot them off into space, or maybe you want to tell them off about what they did. And you just give lots of options, and the person will usually click with one. And different people have sort of different scenarios that feel more satisfying. And for the healthcare workers, whether it's you heal this patient or, you know, another 10 nurses come in assigned to your ICU and begin to take over these patients you can't handle. It's interesting how some people want help from others, and some people want to be more efficacious themselves. And there's probably even more variety in how you want it to come out if it's kind of a bad person is harming you than if it's, you know, something like the virus. So you come up with a really satisfying other way for the dream to turn out, and then you have the person practice that as they're falling asleep. Or again, you can come up with your script yourself, and then as you're falling asleep, you'll be telling yourself, if I have that dream again tonight, I want this other ending I've made up, and you kind of picture the other ending. And that is highly effective at stopping the nightmares, and it also has some effects on other PTSD symptoms. People have fewer startle responses by day, fewer flashbacks by day. Lots of the other symptoms diminish without being directly dealt with. And basically the post-trauma dreams just re-traumatize you every night. It's like the thing has happened again. And having a mastery dream also carries over to your waking emotional state and makes you feel like this is somehow mastered, or it's somehow in the past, or it just emotionally lets you move on.
I love the mastery dream concept, and really training yourself. So I want everyone out there in the Her Podcast land to know that this is all explained beautifully in that chapter. And then finally, as we look at the next two chapters, it's interesting. You've got the whole issue of indirect effects of the pandemic on dreams, the issue of staying at home, and really the new challenges that may be coming up with everything from work, money, and homeschooling. And then the action there is the problem-solving dreams. Now, the one that fascinates me is, how will our world be changed? I think a lot of people, correct me if I'm wrong, are really obsessing about what in heck is going to happen in the future. What's going on? We have, you know, people, scientists who now say that a lot of the reason why we're getting these pandemics is because of what we've done to animals, what we've done to global climate and all the rest of it. And so you talk about issues of the planet heals and dreaming for a cure. And also, you know, sometimes you take on, you know, people can probably take on some kind of heroic roles. I'm laughing because one thing I do, I'm an athlete, but one of the things I love to do is kind of a fun thing is Tai Chi, which is a martial art form where we use swords. We use a long sword. And, you know, we really, it's a very methodical, very, you know, technical kind of thing to do. And I found that once I was in lockdown, when we couldn't be in studio anymore, we do it either by Zoom or we do it in a very large park where we're separated by 20 feet apiece. You know, there's plenty of room, and we do our forms out there. Kind of freaks people out when we whip the swords out, but you know, that's the way it goes. And what's interesting is in my mind, I'm just fighting the bad guys. I don't know who the hell the bad guys are, but you know, it's sort of like E all the above. You know, since I'm a scientist and I spent years at the NIH and the laboratory and the whole thing, I'm thinking like maybe some bad guys are trying to get into my laboratory and I have the key to the vaccine. I don't know. I'm doing all this weird stuff. And some of that started seeping into my dreams. I was like the good guy, you know, the hero and all this stuff. And I thought, oh my gosh, I got to take a breath here. You know, it's like I'm getting a little out of control. But have you seen that kind of manifest itself too?
Yes. I mean, it makes a lot of sense that if you actually do this form of sword work, that it would show up in your dreams, not just as practicing it for its own sake, but as a metaphor that would come to mind when you're fighting anything. As I mentioned, I saw a lot of bug attack dreams. And I think that's partly because of the word, you know, we say, I've got a bug when we're getting sick with a virus. And lots of little things that cumulatively can harm you is a good metaphor. But I saw lots of other, just any natural disaster like tsunamis and hurricanes and tornadoes and wildfires breaking out that people identified as thinking they were a symbol for the virus. But what's really in line with what you're saying is I did notice that the tornadoes as the metaphor for the virus come more from Midwesterners, and the hurricanes as the metaphor for the virus come from people who live along the coast, and the wildfires come from the Australians and the people in California. So, you know, our own experience, even when something just seems like a generic, terrible natural disaster that we all know about, the ones that have threatened us the most come to mind as the threat, but also however you've taught yourself to fight, like the sword fighting, gets in there as a metaphor also.
I know. I felt like such a heroine, you know, I was out there with my little sword and everything. And then, you know, I felt so sheepish when I put my sword back in its little holder. And I said, God, what was I thinking out there? This stuff starting to seep into everything I'm doing. And you know, as we bring this, you know, to a close, I mean, I literally could talk to you forever. First, you're ridiculously articulate. I can see now that you're an A++++ teacher, because you have such a command of the subject, a subject I think that many people don't fully understand at all. And so this is why I'm so happy you wrote this most current book, The Pandemic Dreams, because this really kind of brings a lot of this to the fore. At the very end, in chapter 5, you know, you ask the question, how will our world be changed? And of course, we have the people who think of post-apocalyptic scenarios. And then you have people who are more hopeful about healing and curing, things like this. Your action point is cultivating big dreams. Can you just sort of give us a little teaser on what that means?
Yeah, I mean, a big dream was a term that Jung introduced for these kind of incredibly vivid dreams that just feel like they change your life and sort of chart out your life path, even if you don't quite realize it at the time, that they stick with you. And I certainly have been seeing a few of those coming into the survey about people's future. But we can also influence our dreams just in small ways. The action in another book is just about having dreams about pleasant things you might like to experience rather than your anxiety dreams. But for the big dreams, to think either personally, you know, I mean, now's a time that we're really reevaluating and having to change. So, you know, what do you want, you know, the next few years of your life to be like? What have you learned from this? What has your unconscious learned? You know, ask your dreaming mind to kind of show you, you know, what your changed individual future and calling might be, but also to try to sort of dream that for the world. Again, like, what are we learning from this that we can apply as we come out from lockdown? You know, give me a vision of what the world could be in the future and what role I can play in it.
I love it. And so, yeah, it's a big thing.
Yeah, that just makes it likelier you'll have one of these that some people have already had very spontaneously.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, I just, first of all, the cover of your book is wild. I looked at that and I said, okay, I'm reading this book. And to give everyone a little bit of a about the cover, what was the name of this cover? There was a name here. It said, Help! I Can't Wake Up.
Help, I Can't Wake Up is that it's a piece of my art from one of, I had a couple of dreams about the pandemic just as everything was starting to happen in mid-March. And so I make art from some of my dreams, certainly not most of them, but I made art from both of the two COVID-19 dreams I had. And one piece is on the cover, and the other one called Strange Times is one of the interior illustrations.
I just think that it's fabulous. I mean, hunt and listen, Deirdre, you got me at that. I took one look at the cover and I went, oh man, you know, and this is going to be amazing. All right. Now listen, all my wonderful Her podcast audience, we've been talking to Dr. Deirdre Barrett. She is a PhD, past president of both the International Association for the Study of Dreams and the American Psychological Association's Division 30, the Society for Psychological Hypnosis. She has written a slew of books here, but oh boy, this last one is an absolute, it's a mind blower, Pandemic Dreams. Grab it on Amazon. Just run on over to Amazon right now. That's a command. That wasn't like a discussion. That was a command. And just grab it, because this has really a way to be able to help you reframe the narrative about what's going on. Because quite frankly, this is traumatic, you know, speaking of trauma, for everybody on this globe. It's hitting us at so many different levels. And there's nothing like fear, doubt, and uncertainty to grab, you know, you and thrust you into a rabbit hole of terror and funky nightmares and trauma and all the rest of it. And we're dreaming weirdly. We're dreaming more vividly. And so this book will help guide you as you try to process all of this. Because you know something, between you and me, this is going to be going on for quite some time. And so we need to be able to have a better way to manage all of this. And I found this book to be just spot on. So please, Pandemic Dreams, by Dr. Deirdre Barrett. And Deirdre, I am absolutely honored and so happy you were able to join us on the Her podcast and to enlighten us about all things dreams.
It was a really interesting conversation. You're a terrific host and interviewer, so I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, I'm going to put my sword away right now because, you know, while you've been talking, I've been slicing COVID molecules as they've been flipping by. That's my little daydream. That's what I love to do. Oh, my gosh. It's just so tough. So, again, thank you, and thank you. And everyone out there, run right now. Hit iTunes and rate and review the show because I want to hear from you. This was that good an episode. Why do I know that? Well, because I'm Dr. Pam Peek. I'm host of the Her podcast, and I'm telling you it was. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. Please stay safe and stay well.